This is going to sound like a strange question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Where are you tonight? What? That's not a wrong answer, but that's not what I'm looking for. In the jury box. Wally knows how I think. In the jury box. That's right. And we've been bringing witnesses before you relative to the identity of this man named Jesus. We brought him before the jury and saw the claims that he made, which were rather outstanding, unusual claims, and really puts the issue at focus. Is he really who he claims to be? And if not, he is an absolute fraud or a lunatic. That's our three choices. So then we brought another witness before the jury. Who was our second witness? John the Baptist. And John the Baptist, as a witness, was a man who was respected by the community, even those that did not agree with his preaching. Well, they didn't agree, they just didn't comply. No one accused John of dishonesty. Certainly wasn't a man to be intimidated by others. He was a man of truth and righteousness. And he testified as to the identity of Jesus. So today we began bringing a number of witnesses before the jury who are disciples. A disciple is a follower of Christ. And these people became followers of Jesus Christ. Now, as you hear all the testimony that's being presented on the jury, you can decide a no verdict. So I don't know what the answer is. Or you can decide a guilty verdict. Yes, he is indeed guilty, and guilty of blasphemy, and indeed worthy of death. But you've got to remember that, unlike any other court, your verdict impacts you now and eternally if he is who he claims to be. Look at Acts chapter 17, verse 31. When you look at that verse, this is a scripture from Paul's sermon in Athens. He tells us something about this man, Jesus, which if he is who Paul preached him to be and who the testimony is pointing him out to be, he says, you're right now, you're in the jury box, he's on trial. What's going to happen according to Acts 17:31? He's going to be the judge. You're going to be on the other side of the fence. And he'll decide your eternal destiny and my eternal destiny. So if it's a true picture, and if he is who this man gave his life to preach and teach, someday the tables will be turned, and it's our identity. Who are we? That will be at stake. Okay. So, John, some of our first verses are from John chapter 1, where new disciples were being made. Do y'all have a copy of the lesson for tonight? The one that says disciples? Okay, good. What did Andrew say about Jesus, John 1:41. We have found the Messiah. When he said the Messiah, explain to me a little bit more about how large that statement is, what it encompasses.
King James says he was being interpreted as the Christ.
Okay, well, what does that mean?
He was the one that was to come. He's the one that was prophesied by the second Samuel.
That's right. He's the one that was to come that they expected. He's the one that was spoken of all the way back from Genesis chapter 3. He's the one that was in the covenant with Abraham. He's the one that was the descendant of David. He's the one that the prophets talked about. So when a Jew said, "We have found the Messiah," that's a very full statement. Do y'all have a copy of the lesson tonight that's on the disciples? But we got some extra copies if you need them. Anybody need a copy? Craig's got some extras. Y'all will have the better ones. They got the right date and the corrections I've made on it. Okay. So, this is Philip. Now, you'll note I have on the lesson that these are disciples. If Philip believed what he said, what would that encourage him to do about Jesus?
Follow him.
Isn't that what a disciple is? So he said, but these are disciples. Well, if you saw and heard something that persuaded you that he was the Messiah, would it not be natural if you were honest of heart to follow him? Because their disciples does not invalidate their testimony. If you're in a court of law and a witness testifies in your favor, the other lawyer doesn't have a right to stand up and say, "Well, you got to mark that testimony out because he's testified in favor of the witness." I mean, the person on trial. Yes, he's a disciple, and these are disciples. And if what they say about him is true, I'm not surprised at all. In fact, it's the other way around. When we read some of the testimony we're going to read in some future lessons, if the Lord is willing, it's more amazing to me that these people did not become his disciples. All right, so that's Philip. Well, here's Nathanael. Now, in John chapter 1 and verse 46, you'll see that Nathanael was not in a state of mind to be ready to accept this fellow Jesus as worthy of any confidence. Why? According to John 1:46. Where he was from Nazareth. He said, "Could any good thing come out of Nazareth?" That's a pretty interesting statement. It says something about the city of Nazareth, its reputation. I'll tell you, it says something else about Mary, doesn't it? Mary lived in Nazareth, didn't she? And yet she was a virgin. There are good and righteous people living in very wicked places. And the beauty is God knows their address and he knows their name. Nevertheless, so Nathanael, his first inclination would be to say, "There's nothing good about this guy. I know where he's from, and there you just don't meet anybody from Nazareth that's worth a flip." All right, so when he said that, Philip met that challenge. How did he meet that challenge? John 1:46. Come and see. Hey, all right, fine. Come see for yourself. You come and investigate. That's a fair challenge. You know, today if we meet somebody that doesn't believe in Jesus, okay, fine. Are you willing to come meet him? We'll sit down and we'll talk about who he is. Come meet him. And you know, if you've been here for a number of years, we've had men, some we supported, some we had in a meeting, who didn't know Jesus, but they read the Gospels, and they came to know him, and they became his disciples. And so there's a powerful thing in just getting to know him. We got good parents here who want their children to serve Jesus as the Christ. It starts with and ends, the foundation is getting to know him. Who is this guy? Well, come and see. Let's talk about him. In your family Bible studies, talk about who he is. And get your young people familiar with this particular individual. All right, so come and see for yourself. Now, on your lesson, I've got a mistake here. I think I've got, after that, what was Daniel's conclusion? John 1:47, which makes no sense. It should be John 1:49. And I've moved that down below the question about what caused Nathaniel to elevate his testimony. I've reversed the order of those. Makes more sense this way. So, Jesus then said something that caused Nathaniel to elevate his testimony about Jesus to the ultimate. What is it that Jesus said about Nathaniel?
When you were under the fig tree, I saw you.
What's the deal with that? When was Nathaniel under a fig tree? How do you know? Where's that in the Bible? You're right, I think. But it's not in the Scriptures. There's something about this. Maybe we cannot explain it. And as one writer says, we leave the mystery to John as he left it to us. So it may be one of those things where you say, I don't know. But there was something about this statement Jesus made to this man who was not credulous. He wasn't in a mood to believe. But there's something about this that immediately struck him. That this guy is not an ordinary man. There is no way he could have known what he just told me. As an ordinary man. I found a quote. There's a commentator I sometimes use. As you know, I don't think a whole lot of commentators. This particular guy, when he's commentating on the meaning of a verse, you wonder where he came from. But he did have a lot of resources that a lot of commentators do not have availability to. His name's John Gill. And some of you may have digital Bibles with references to John Gill. But John Gill, in his commentary, said this. It is said of Nathanael in the Syriac Dictionary that his mother laid him under a fig tree when the infants were slain at Bethlehem, which, if it could be depended upon, must be to Nathanael a surprising and undeniable proof of the deity of Christ and of his being the true Messiah, since at that time he was an infant of days himself and was the person Herod was seeking to destroy. So here's Jesus, about 30. Here's Nathanael. When you were a child, so as Sally commented, not only was Nathanael a child, Jesus maybe just an infant. But according to this secular comment, accurate, I don't know, when all those baby boys were being killed, I would say Nathanael was 2 years old and under, right? His mother took him out and laid him under a fig tree. How, 30 years later, a man who he'd never met could say, I saw you under the fig tree. That would have been a family story that would have been told in their family throughout the years. Whatever it was, whether it's that or not, boy, it struck Nathanael. And so, whatever there was about it, what was his conclusion now in verse 49? You are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel. Now, what makes his testimony now more credible than maybe an average witness? What? Because he didn't believe it first. He was opposed. He did not come ready to believe. Oh, yeah, show me. I'm ready. No. Ain't anything good coming out of Nazareth. But now, and apparently this guy was not a fella you could buy off. He wasn't afraid to say what he thought. And yet he said, you're the Son of God. You're the King of Israel. And Jesus' own testimony about Nathanael was pretty high himself. Yes, sir. Well, that was his conclusion. Whether or not it's that incident I mentioned, I do not know. Because that's based on something else besides Scripture. But it makes sense that it would be something like that. But I certainly would not be dogmatic about that because it's resting on this other source. All right. So now we've got Peter. Over in John chapter 6. Now, on this particular occasion, in John chapter 6 that we have here in verse 68 and 69, we're going to read. Before you read that, go back to verse 60. And what's going on this occasion? Everybody clamoring, boy, this guy's great. Clapping their hands, we love you. What's going on?
They're grumbling.
They're grumbling? Do they believe what Jesus has been preaching about himself? No. So this can't be so. And what is this big multitude there? Peter's a Jew. They're Jews. What does this big multitude do? They withdrew. They left. Imagine thousands of people listening to Jesus. And it comes a point of time. They start leaving, leaving, leaving. Who are left? Who's left? About 500? The apostles. And so, here's all his Jewish brethren have departed and left Jesus. And so Jesus turns to his disciples. Verse 66, many of his disciples withdrew, were not walking with him anymore. So I said to 12, whether or not there was a handful of others, I don't know. But Jesus turned to the 12 and he said, you do not want to go away also, do you? And so here's, are you going to follow with everybody else? Follow with the crowd? What is Peter's response?
To whom shall we go?
To whom shall we go? For what?
Truth.
Huh?
Truth. You have the words of
eternal life.
Where else can we go? You are the one that holds the key to life. That's what Peter said about him. Now, it's interesting as you study Peter's later life. We, first of all, let's get this Matthew 16 passage. What did he say about him on this occasion? You're the Christ, the Son of the living God. That's pretty much what everybody was saying at that time, right?
No.
You look up in the previous verses, what were some saying about Jesus? Who was he? What were the crowd saying about him? Verse 13 following. Some say John the Baptist, some say Elijah, one of the prophets. There's all kind of different ideas. So Peter stands up boldly and says, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And Jesus said, "Upon this rock, this foundation truth, I'll build my church." Now what's interesting, as you then pursue the life of Peter, and this has the stamp of authenticity on these records. Here's the man that made the confession upon which Jesus said, "I'll build my church." If you're writing this for future generations and you want people to come to respect Jesus, which is what Matthew would want, he's the writer, as well as these other apostles or prophets, what light would you want to paint Peter in from then on out? A good light, a bad light, a stable man, or unstable, or what? Would you want to paint him later as someone who denied Jesus? Yet, he did. Not once, but three times. And Matthew says, after recording that, Matthew 26, last verse 75, Jesus looked at him, he went out and wept bitterly. This is the same guy who made this confession. But what's interesting, the writers recorded both for you, the reader. But there's more. Now you come to the day of Pentecost, after the resurrection of Jesus. What kind of people is Peter preaching to? I mean, are they believers? No. Would they resort to any kind of violence if somebody preached something they didn't agree with? Indeed. Less than 2 months earlier, what had they done? Had Jesus nailed to a cross. Peter's preaching. And in his sermon, what does he tell these people they're guilty of? Murdering the Son of God. Man. That's that same guy who denied him. What's happened to him then in Acts 2? Resurrection. The resurrection. And so you murdered the Son of God. Now you've got to believe in him. You've got to confess him as your Lord. And so here you find this same guy preaching boldly what he confessed back in Matthew 16. And you continue to trace him out through the book of Acts, in Acts 3 and Acts 4. He was brought before the Supreme Court. They threatened him, "Don't preach in this name, don't preach in this name." He went out and preached some more, brought him back in, they whipped him. Put him in jail. Don't preach in this name. He's set free from prison. What does he do? Goes and preaches it again. Now, he's willing to face beatings and imprisonment and death if necessary for his testimony. I read a book by a fellow who was a cold case homicide detective, J. Warner Wallace, I think's his name, or J. Wallace Warner, whatever. And he talks about when you investigate witnesses, some of the things you look for. And one of them is, are they credible? In other words, have they ever lied? And they may have. But that doesn't necessarily mean their testimony is not credible. There may have been a reason they lied. They were intimidated, their fear, whatever it was. But you got to kind of weigh their testimony. And one of the things you look for is now their testimony. What if they testify this way? How's it going to impact them? Socially, their family, their jobs, etc. You look for that in witnesses. If you're a homicide detective trying to figure out a cold case. So you look at this guy. Here's one time he says, "You're the Son of God." Here's another time he says, "No, he's not. I don't even know the guy." But now his life is on the line. He's threatened. He's put in jail. He will not renounce his testimony. In fact, he's telling everybody in Jerusalem about it. That's this witness. So if you were Peter, you had lived with Jesus for 3 years or however long length of time of his ministry, saw what he saw, heard what he heard, saw him nailed to a cross. 3 days later, the tomb was empty. You and John ran to the tomb, and the tomb was empty. That evening, he appeared to you. He appeared to you again the next Sunday evening. Here's the question. Would you be his disciple? Peter became a disciple. Here's his testimony. Okay, look at Martha, John chapter 11. Yes, sir. Right. The evidences were very strong and convincing to this body of men, as Ennis has pointed out. That's right. Okay. John chapter 11. Jesus made an interesting statement about this man, Jesus. What did she say about her brother?
She said that if he had been there, her brother would not have died.
Was Jesus a great physician of that day or something?
Mm-hmm. They believed in him as his miracles.
Apparently, she believed he had some kind of power over death itself. If you'd have been here, my brother wouldn't have died, Jesus. Well, that's what she said about him there. Look at chapter 11, verse 27, after this interchange, this discussion between Martha and Jesus. What did she say about him now, verse 27? What is this coming into the world business? Means he was born, Mary, or does that have something to do with somewhere else he came from? Yeah, it came from heaven. You're the Christ, Son of God. It comes into this world. So that's Martha. I mean, she's a lady. You can go talk to Martha. Well, Martha, here's what do you think about Jesus? Well, here's what I think. Here's my testimony. Well, you put her on the witness stand. That's what she would say. But there's more here in this case, obviously, and we'll talk about this in a later lesson if the Lord is willing, that served to confirm the faith that she had. Even she was surprised at what happened just a little bit later. Even though she made this confession, what happened a little later was pretty astounding. Well, here's Thomas. Look at John 20. Yes, ma'am. Even now I know whatever you ask of God, God will give you. I don't know what else to say about it, except she thought if he asked God to raise Lazarus, he would do it. Evidently.
Okay.
I don't know what else it would be. All right, and then here's Thomas, John 20. So here we are in John 20, verse 19. You may have written out in your margin, what time, what day is this? Which first day? You're right, first day. Which first day? It's a special first day. Day he was raised. It's that evening on that day. That very day. And so, he's appears to the disciples. And verse 20 invites them to see the place where his hands were nailed and the spear was thrust. But note verse 24. Thomas wasn't there. Now look, you're Thomas. You've worked with these men. These are close associates. One of them's not there anymore. Judas, he's a deserter, of course. But there's 10 others. 10! These are not just your friends. I mean, you've worked close together for nearly 3 years. And they say, Jesus is risen from the dead. Well, how do you know? We saw him. You saw him? James? I saw him. John, you saw him? Yeah, I saw him. Philip, did you see? I saw him. But what did Thomas say?
I'm not going to believe it.
I'm not going to believe it until I see. What does that tell you about Thomas as a witness? What? Okay. He wasn't credulous. He wanted evidence. But that was evidence. Did Jesus expect Thomas to believe the testimony?
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But he didn't. And so, he said, as I see in his hands that imprint of the nails, put my finger into the place of the nails and put my hand to his side, I'll not believe. So 8 days later. 8 days later would be what? Next first day of the week. That's right. 8 days inclusive. Next first day of the week. And so he appears to him again, invites Thomas. Reach here your finger, see my hand, reach here your hand, put it into my side, be not unbelieving, but believing. Did he? I don't know. He saw enough. And so Thomas, what was his response? My Lord and my God. So, then we have this marvelous statement by Jesus, and then the statement by John that follows on that. So Jesus says, because you've seen me, have you believed? And then Jesus talks about you and me. He said, blessed are they who did not see and yet believed. Wait a minute. I haven't seen the risen Lord. He's not appeared in a vision to me. I haven't touched him. How does John say Jesus expects those who did not see to believe?
Faith.
What?
Faith.
Faith what? Just, I believe it. Is that it?
No, the evidence is provided.
What evidence?
The testimony,
where is it at? These are written. Look at it. That you may believe. That's why you have the four Gospels. They contain the evidence, the testimony. That's it. What we're doing in this course is exactly that. We're looking at what was written and looking at the evidence of the testimony of those who lived during that time. John 19, 35 through 37, what kind of witness was John?
Eyewitness.
He was there. And he said, he who is seen is born witness. Again, this homicide detective I told you about, that's one of the things he wants to know about a witness. Four things that he talked about. One of them is this. If a guy claims to be a witness to a crime, was he there? Was he in a position and a place to know what he's testifying to? What he heard and saw? John said, I was there. I saw this. I saw what happened on the cross. And yet he writes 3 days later, the same guy's walking around and talking. He said, I was there. That's the kind of witness he was. Look at chapter 21, 24. Remember we talked about the truthfulness of a witness? This is the disciple who bears witness of these things and wrote these things, and we know that his witness is true. True witness. This last section on your lesson, generally, that is, disciples generally, not a particular disciple, but a number of disciples at the same time about the same events. Matthew 8:27. What was the testimony of the disciples on that occasion? What did the disciples say about him? Not one, but several. Man, what kind of man is this? That he can say to the storm, hush, be still. You might tell your kids that and they ignore you. He said it, everything calmed down. They just stand amazed. Who is this guy? Not just one, several disciples. Wide open area, storm on the sea. Matthew 14:33, what'd they say? You are certainly God's son. And then in John 16:30, the disciples that he was talking to the night of his betrayal, preparing them to be witnesses. Verse 30, now we know that you know all things and have no need for anyone to question you. By this we believe that you came from God. That faith was really tested that night, the next day, but it was strongly confirmed the day after when they ran to the tomb and the tomb was empty. And for the next 40 days, got to talk with him, eat with him, to see the convincing evidences that he came from God, that he was the Son of God. So, here we are at the end of this lesson. You're the jury. It's up to you to decide, who is this Jesus? Who is he? You young people in our audience, you've heard about Jesus from the time you were old enough for your mom and dad to read to you. Who is he? You don't have to depend on what your mom and dad told you. What they told you is good. So, well, I'm getting old enough, I don't want to do what mom and dad said. Oh, well, they told you to brush your teeth. You not brush your teeth anymore? They told you not to play in the street, so you're going to go play in the middle of the street and get run over? Because mom and dad told you something doesn't mean it's right, but it certainly doesn't mean it's wrong. Test it. Test it. You can test it. Here's the evidence. That's what we're looking at. All right. The Lord willing, Sunday we'll talk about the testimony of the populace. Have a couple lessons on that. If you don't have copies, I can print some more, but I think there's some in the back. And so we'll talk about that, the Lord willing, on Sunday. Any comments before we close the class?